Brett, today we're talking about the wealthy.
What? Does that mean us? What does that mean?
No, actually, so that's your trivia question, is how much do you have to have? What does your net worth have to be in America to be considered wealthy?
In America?
Yeah.
$200,000.
$2.3 million.
Whoa, all right. We are in the poorhouse, baby.
Yeah. Well, that seems like a crazy definition of wealthy, and it's really interesting. We've talked a lot in the past about how, you know, I keep up with a lot of like different mustachian folk who have retired early, and you know, we have a lot of friends who have retired at a young age in their 30s and such, and like none of them even hit that level of net worth, which is kind of funny.
Right, or didn't need to.
Right, and they're like, I have enough money to live on for the rest of my life, and I don't need $2.3 million.
Right, so is that like the, you know, percent or cutoff for like the one percenters or something?
It must be in net worth. Usually we talk about income for that, but I don't know. You know, I Google what is the definition of wealthy, and that's the number that comes up, so it must be true because Google never lies.
That's right, okay.
So today, actually, I found an article on entrepreneur.com or something. I don't know. It popped up in my Google feed and it said 20 habits.
In Google we trust and in Google we trust but verify.
That's right. The article title is 20 habits that prevent you from being a millionaire. And I just think this is really interesting since we obviously, our podcast talking all about saving money, and Brett and I have saved money since we were children. You know, we like to think we're experts on good, healthy habits.
Right. So it'll be good to have somebody else tell us if we're doing it right or not.
Yeah. So I wanted to go through these 20 tips and we're just going to give you our opinion. So here we go. Cool. Number one, sleep when you shouldn't. Says if you wake up until noon and work 12 hours or more, make up for the late start. I understand. However, successful people are known to wake up early. So the whole point here is wake up early. I would say we are early risers for sure. So.
Yeah, I don't think that was always the case. I think both of us, even when we were dating, what was that, like 10 years ago now almost?
Yeah.
Both of us were up like pretty late because, I mean, we were like talking to each other on like Skype because
you were
in Indiana and I was in Chicago.
But I was still awake early because I remember that was like a pet peeve of yours when we started dating is like, I've never been able to sleep in past 7 o'clock. I've dealt with terrible insomnia in my life, which has actually gotten far better now that I like stick to a better sleep routine.
Mm-hmm.
But I would always be up at 7 o'clock hungry because you'd be like, God damn it, woman. So, you know, I would actually say I've always been kind of an early riser. But
yeah, I was definitely not. Like, I would always try to sleep until like 10 o'clock. But then I think when I moved to Chicago is when that shifted because I ended up waking up with the sun and like, you know, that was like a great time shift because it was like just on the edge of like the time zone. And so like I would be like an early, very early morning, and the sun would be like way out. Like it was like 5:30 in the morning and it was like bright outside, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, very easy for me to wake up in the morning. And then I just like dialed back like how late I was staying.
But you know, I actually do recommend that if you can wake up early, do it. Because it's a great way to like fit in a little extra work in the morning, go for a workout. We like to do a walk in the morning and a slow breakfast. We like make our own breakfast every morning, sit down at the breakfast table. And I think it's like a really good start to our day.
You can do anything you want because like it's dead everywhere.
Right.
Like nobody wakes up until like after 9 o'clock and you can just be like the only person in the world.
And there's like no better feeling than being like, I've done all of this and it's like only 8:30 and I still have so much day ahead of me.
Right. And I don't mean when it's dark outside. I mean like, yeah, we used to like go for walks like on like the lakefront trails and stuff. And like, there'd be like three people out there.
But
and then you go out at 2 o'clock and there's like 3,000 people
there.
Yeah,
but because there were fewer people, we also would like get to talking to them, and we met some great people in the park.
Oh, right. That were all kind of on the same schedule.
That were all like awesome people. Right. So yeah, I know this is a good tip. We're starting out strong. Number two. So this is what you shouldn't do, I guess, as a, you know, entrepreneur or as
they're
millionaire.
Just speaking in
so
reverse.
Two, neglecting your health. So the whole point is don't neglect your health. You know, bad habits can be bad things.
I mean,
so when you're unhealthy, you're tired. If you're less productive or more stressed, you're more likely to get sick. I actually really agree with this. Take care of your health. We have found that working in like daily walks into our routine and eating healthy has done a lot of good for both of us.
And there's a lot of like auxiliary side effects around, like, maybe you don't realize you're not as healthy, but like your brain does, right? You're not thinking as clearly, like you're restless when you're sleeping, you're just overtired or overexhausted, or like you end up having like these weird issues that you have to like then like overcome or just deal with or just put up with, right? And that's just like brain power or physical power that you're just like not putting forth whatever you're trying to accomplish, right?
Right.
Everything is just way harder when like your body hurts or you're fatigued or like, right, you just get frustrated a lot easier.
Yeah.
Let me tell you how I know after the baby keeping us up for the last year.
Health is wealth, baby. Okay, the next one is read. People with money invest the time and effort to expand their knowledge, keep up with the news and trends within their industry, learn from others, and take responsibility for continuing to innovate. I would actually strongly agree with this. I think I'm an avid reader. I have been for a long time. You've actually kind of come around to reading.
Right. My whole life I've like hated reading. Like I just never got into like anything. So I would say even within the last year, I've just started to like read things for like my own personal interest. But I'm always up on the latest whatever, right?
Right.
Either whether it's part of like my career or like whatever a new thing is, or like learning new skills. I think that's really more what it is like,
right,
continue being a lifelong learner here in whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah, and I know some people learn better with videos, whatever. I think the point is there to like innovate, continue learning and growing, and that is definitely something we recommend and we do as we've renovated 3 houses or duplexes in the last 6 months here with a 9-month-old. Don't recommend it, but like
well, from going from like nothing, right? Like
right.
We have no experience or
Brett is
background.
Now like basically a plumber and an electrician, and like
right, like
I just do all the like unskilled like
right.
painting
to but. The point where like I'm running into these like dumb problems where like I can identify that whoever set this stuff up was a complete moron or had no idea what they were doing, or like literally were punching holes in the wall with their fist because that's what the shape of the hole is, and like just hooked it together with like whatever bubble gum they had laying around. So I have to go back and like fix all this stuff now and do it the right way. I am not qualified to technically do it the right way, but I'm doing it.
Right. Well, because you're learning as you go, and it's getting easier as we go and we have more experience under our belts.
Right.
But yeah, definitely like it's been a challenge. And I think it's good to challenge yourself.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
Definitely agree with that one. Okay. Number 4. Don't rely on a single source of income. People with a lot of money have several sources of income. This is actually really true. I highly recommend this.
It doesn't necessarily mean you need like a side hustle.
No, it can honestly be as simple as having mutual funds and having dividends generated for you. Your money can work harder than you can, but from a young age, starting when I was 19, I got my first mutual fund. So that baby has been kicking off interest and dividends for me for a long time now. On top of that, Brett and I used to both have jobs. I still have a job. Brett is, you know, taking care of our daughter. But then we also have rental properties that Brett is like the property manager of. And so because we've diversified our assets through investments, let me tell you, when Brett lost his job in 2020, it made it much easier to stomach all of these changes.
By having things that were not affected by that.
Yeah.
Right. And I think probably this is the biggest one on the list, if I had to guess, for like how wealthy people continue being wealthy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Their dividends are what are like continuing to like make them like not require getting a job or losing
right.
money, or right, they can kind of do whatever they want, and that's their primary income stream because they don't have a traditional revenue stream.
Yeah, and I want to be very clear that like you don't have to have a side hustle that's like this crazy project. Like literally a lot of people who are wealthy continue to be wealthy and are wealthy because they invest in mutual funds, period.
Yep.
So your money can work harder than you. You don't have to do anything crazy. Just invest. Don't just save your money in a savings account. Invest your money and it will pay off for you. Okay, the next one. Set a budget.
Oh,
obviously.
Very important. Yeah.
We are big on this. We always set a budget. You know, it's evolved for us over time. When I was starting out, it used to be like a very strict monthly budget. I kept track of, you know, every transaction kind of as I was spending it. And I think sometimes when you get started with a budget, you have to be a lot more like cautious and careful as you go. But now I would say Brett and I don't like actively track things as closely, but we just know how much we're spending, and then we do check-ins.
Despite Angela's dismay there, because she loves to have the budget parties. Like, every time we have, like, a new phase of our life, she's like, okay, let's sit down and, like, have our budget party.
Right? Sure. But now we kind of do, like, maybe quarterly, annual type reviews. You know, obviously I'm looking at our finances on a regular basis, but, you know, I think some people, when they hear budget, they're like, I don't want to be plotting every dollar I spend for the rest of my life. It doesn't have to be that.
And we've
it's just a plan.
We've rolled a lot of those behaviors as, like, you know, planning our budgets as we've gone along. We've rolled a lot of that into our, like, regular routine now. Where, like, right. That's just part of our, like, normal behavioral pattern. Whereas, like, when we started doing this, nowhere near that. Like, what you do when you start budgeting on day one is even from, the day one of year two, right? Day 365 or 366 is going to be a totally different way of you setting up a budget.
Right.
Because you will have learned so much. You will have controlled so many things. You'll understand your expenses and your income a little bit better and where the money is going and have plans for stuff. Like, it just kind of evolves over time as you just, like, pay more attention to it.
Right. So it can be, you know, varying levels, but definitely having a budget is a great thing. Number six, think ahead. So in my study, 95% of poor people did not save, and most of them accumulated debt to subsidize their quality of life. So not saving and spending more than you earn creates long-term poverty.
I don't know if that's as strong of an argument as, like, this is what's keeping poor people poor as much as it's making people wealthy.
Yeah, but. And, you know, I always try to be really careful when we talk about financial things, too, like, it's also really important to check your privilege. And so, you know, if you've come from a background where you don't have that safety net, and you have you have a big debt that kind of, like, steamrolls you, it's a lot harder to dig out of debt with a low paying job than it is to dig out of debt even with a college debt with a, now you have a degree and you have a higher paying
debt,
job.
It's medical debt, right?
Right.
Which is a nightmare. It's payday advance. It's like, if you get there's like a million landmines at that tier, right?
Yep.
If you don't have enough money to, like, get away from that tier, it will keep clawing you back down, right?
Right. So I am very sympathetic to getting that first base is really tough in life. And, you know, I was there when I graduated college. I had student loan debt. I had a really big medical debt hit me. But fortunately, I was, like, able to get out of it without really high interest, payments because especially with the medical debt, I was able to just kind of, like, work out a payment plan with the hospital over a few months to, like, get out of that. And I know that was, like, a lucky thing. And I didn't have, like, you know, it was at the point where if, like, one more big financial thing hit me, it could have really, like, wrecked me. But I was lucky that didn't happen.
Right.
So I understand, like, how fragile that balance can be. And, that's one that I think over time, yes, plan ahead. And obviously, if you can, like, consolidate high interest debt into lower interest debt, those are great steps to, like, get you out of that. But I am sympathetic that, like, sometimes some of these things can feel a bit out of your control. But I will say, the more that you can plan ahead, and, for example, like, if you have a refrigerator that's working, even if you want that new refrigerator, don't finance appliances, don't finance furniture, wait until you can pay for that stuff with cash. Like, those decisions will actually help you a lot. So there are certain things that I can see this being applicable to. I wouldn't say this is, like, a millionaire status thing. I think this is something that disproportionately can affect lower income people.
So right. Yeah.
There's my spiel. Okay. Number seven, pay attention to small expenses. You may think spending $4 a day on a cup of coffee has no effect on your wallet. The same goes for that $100 gym membership, but these small expenses can add up quickly. I actually do really believe in this.
We have probably a dozen episodes that we've talked about some variety of this, whether it comes down to Netflix payments, you know, or any of those services, right? Amazon Prime, whatever, individual purchases of, like, you know, can you turn your, like, you know, we harp on Starbucks all the time. Can we turn the Starbucks into, like, basically not drinking Starbucks as your side hustle, right, for the year?
Right. Right.
There's all kinds of ways to save money by piecemealing it, right? And would you be happier with a cheeseburger?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is obviously something that comes from having a good budget and reviewing your expenses. And by no means are we saying to cut out all the small luxuries in life. If you do enjoy that latte, like I do too, I get a coffee a week. It's like my thing this year. We have, you know, local coffee shops that we like to support. But it's just like being mindful of how much that really is costing you. And, you know, we have cut a lot of subscription services in our life because I always make the argument, if you have Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus, like how many things can you watch all at the same time? Turn those on and off.
Right. You should. It is definitely wasteful to have more than one of those at a time.
Right.
Because, like, whatever you were planning to watch simultaneously is going to be there when whatever you're watching on the other one is done. Right. Whenever that season ends. And just switch it back and forth.
Okay. So, number 8, dating the right people. Replace the toxic and negative people in your life with those who are optimistic, motivating, and supportive. You know, I will actually go on to say it's not just dating people. Obviously, like, I think Brett and I having the relationship we have and being on the same page financially makes a big difference. But I will also say surround yourself with the right people outside of just who you date, but your friends. Like, I've heard you are most similar to the 5 people you surround yourself with the most. And I will say, as I have friends and make friends through the podcast and I have people texting me about budget questions, it holds me accountable as well. And it's opened this door to talking about like finances with people, and having people in my life who are like saving money and normalizing this stuff makes it easier for me to stay motivated. Where if you're around people who are like, let's go out to eat all the time, or let's go join the country club, it can be like a slippery slope into keeping up with the Joneses, right?
Right. And I mean, we find out about, you know, things that are completely mind-blowing to me, like people have their own bank accounts and like they don't even know, share with their spouse like what they make, right? That they're married to, right? Not that they're just dating, but that, like, they're married to, like, that person has, one, no access to any of the money that person is making, and two, has no idea what the revenue stream coming into the household is. Like, not sharing that level of detail is just like, what?
Right.
What kind of relationship is that? Like, right. What are you doing?
Right.
So, but it's out there, so.
All right. Number 9, don't postpone. It's one thing to say you want to become a millionaire and another to start doing it. If you want to get out of financial stagnation, you need to start taking action as soon as possible. Sit down with a financial planner, adjust your budget. This would be a great step to start. You know, I do agree with this. If you want to start saving money, the best time to do it was 10 years ago, but the second best time is today. So, you know, it's never too late to start, but start now. Don't make excuses. Don't say, okay, I'm going to look at my budget next week. You know, decide to have, you know, hey, have a budget party tonight. You know, it's like no date night is more romantic than when I'm like, Brett, tonight we're going to be having a budget party. So definitely, like, the sooner you start, the easier it all is. You know, Brett and I were fortunate enough to start really saving aggressively in our 20s. And I will tell you, as a 30-year-old mom, there's a lot of stressful things in my life, and not having to stress about like figuring out a budget and stuff is really nice because we've have this framework set up. And so I promise you that it will never get easier. Life only gets more expensive and more complicated. So start today, wherever you are in life, just start today. Sit down and write down your expenses, even if that's step one.
Right. It's so beneficial to do it in your 20s. It's very beneficial to do it in your 30s. It's still very, very beneficial to do it in your 40s, right? But, like, yeah, do it in your 20s. Like,
right.
It's just easy street for the rest of your life. If you can do it in your 20s, you only have to do it for, like, a couple years, and then you're good. You're good for the rest of your life.
Okay, number 10, don't drink or gamble. There's nothing like getting rich quick. Financial success takes time, initiative, and requires effort. Those who gamble are deluded into thinking there's a shortcut to success. You know, I half agree with this, I half don't. We have a friend who is a very successful poker player. But I don't really consider him gambling because it's not like he's like doing the slot machines. But in all seriousness, you know, this is kind of a weird way to say it, but there isn't a shortcut. And so for all the people you see on YouTube who are like, do this and follow this roadmap and like you'll build wealth, like they're trying to sell you something. They're trying to sell you an idea. And most people, you know, in all the books that I've read about personal finance and then reading like Millionaire Next Door, most people who hit this millionaire status are the people that you would never associate with it, because they're the ones like driving the old Toyota Camry and you know, not really bragging about their wealth. And they're the ones who have money in the bank. The people with like the flashy cars are the ones who spend all their money, right?
Right.
And so as much as we talked about getting a side hustle, like don't imagine that you're going to get the side hustle that's just going to make you $1 million. It's really establishing those really good, strong habits of saving money, having a budget, having a plan, and going where you want to go, figuring out what your goals are and achieving them.
Right. The road to financial freedom and financial success is boring.
Right.
It's just like continuing to invest in mutual funds, like basically, and then managing your own expenses and like doing some other things. But like none of it's like glamorous. It's not like you're just going to go like build a bunch of like houses in the middle of the forest, you know, right? And then people are just going to spend $1 million a night trying to stay there, you know. Maybe one guy got away with that in California because he created this like marketing scheme or whatever, and then now he's tried to write a book and sell his story and like
right.
create YouTube channels and create all these like Instagram followers and like whatever, right? Now he's just trying to make a money machine off of it.
Or like all the MLMs that are like sell our shakes. And like here's the roadmap to how I became successful. Like you see people doing this all the time.
This concept
like,
is now new.
Maybe it right? worked Not for new. Them, but it's like literally the definition of a pyramid scheme. So
yep.
I mean, good luck. Okay, number...
That's probably on this list. One of the things you should do is create a pyramid scheme.
We'll see. So far, this list has been pretty decent. Number 11, watching too much TV. Rich people have small televisions and big libraries. Poor people have small libraries and big televisions, Zig Ziglar once said. You know, I think there's a time and a place for everything, and I would say moderation is key here. So we do a lot. We, you know, I work all day. I take care of a baby. I... a renovated duplex on weekends. And I will say, like, sometimes I just have to take that hour at night to, like, zone out then. And I don't think that's the point. I don't think it's never watch TV. I think it's everything in moderation.
But I don't necessarily agree with that. Yeah, right. Because you could you, like, totally get rich by, like, watching TV and playing video games all the time? And, well, and working, obviously. You have to have some kind of income stream. But if, like, those are your hobbies that are not expensive... Right?
Right.
And, like, that's where, like, all of your expenses go. Then you are going to have a positive outflow, you know, cash flow. So, like, you're still going to do well. Like, we tend to, like, not watch a lot of TV, but then we do other fun things. And we, like, go to Europe and we do all these, like, trips and, like, have all these other things that we're, like, investing in and try to, you know, try as best we can to, like, have those things, like, make us more income. But, like... we are spending a lot of money to learn a lot of new, like, talents
yeah.
and experiences and things.
I think the point of this is, like, don't just get off work at 5 o'clock and go hole yourself up and watch TV all night. That's just not a very fulfilling life.
Yeah.
Necessarily. So by finding other interests and hobbies and doing other things and being, you know, exercising, like, those are all things that are going to probably... contribute to a healthier life. So, like I said, everything in moderation.
Well, it seems like it is super fulfilling until, like... you come full circle and end up like starting to watch a new show on Netflix and then realize that you had already watched this whole show and like you're 4 episodes in and you didn't realize it until then. Then that's like kind of like peak binge bottoming out.
Yeah. Okay, number 12, find a mentor. This is actually advice I hear all the time is like have a mentor. I have had people who have influenced me in life. I don't know that I've like officially been able to ever be like, this person is my mentor and I go to them when I need advice. So
yeah, I always hated those questions on like college essays or like high school essays or like who's your like go-to mentor and stuff. I'm like, I don't know.
I feel like I have different people that I can tap into for different areas of my life. But as far as like a life coach or something, like I've never had one of those. So not saying that this wouldn't be valuable if you find that right person for you. But I'm also a big fan of maybe like just having a lot of places to access information and, you know, going back to being a lifelong learner, if you have different people that you look up to in different spaces. So, you know, we're getting into a lot of building stuff and Brett has a lot of different YouTubers that he follows that specialize in different building science topics. Right. That can be like a good way to gain information without having like a dedicated mentor.
Right. So I'm just like, and it's easier today and harder today than ever to find people who are like knowledgeable in a particular space that you can depend on the information that they're telling you. And like, ideally they're learning about whatever they're talking about too. Cause like, especially with the building science stuff, a lot of it is like very new. And a lot of the people that are like leading the charge and the conversations and are like kind of like the public faces of this stuff are like doing a lot of experimentation, but they've also worked in the industry for like 30 years and have been like playing around with stuff and like have a lot to fall back on of like what to do and not do. So like I trust their judgment like a little bit more. But there's also people that have come out there and they're just like, you know, they've been doing stuff wrong for 30 years and like I don't trust their advice and like whatever they tell you is like very bad information. But like they sound the same as the people that know what they're talking about. And, like, at face value, if I was just, like, looking at two things that were to the compare and contrast information, it's very hard to discern who's the right one without looking, like, a lot deeper into, like, their backgrounds or whatever, right? Right. So very, very tough, but also very valuable to, like, find things that are, you know, people that you can gravitate to.
Right. Yep. All right, number 13, get out of your comfort zone. Getting out of your comfort zone is unsettling, I understand, but you have to take that leap to find financial success. The pursuit of wealth requires risks. Most people do not, so they are not rich, says Corley.
I don't really agree with this one. I mean, so yes, we kind of like got into a new field, like the property management stuff was like very different for us to get into it, but we understood kind of the market and a lot of that component. We just didn't understand like the home maintenance part of it. So like that's what we got into that was uncomfortable by necessity. And, you know, it would have been expensive to do that otherwise, but.
Yeah, you know, I do think depending where you're at in life, this can be more or less applicable to you. You know, if you've been like budgeting, for example, the same way forever or lack thereof budgeting, and it's out of your comfort zone to like sit down and put all those numbers on paper, then you have to do that, right?
Yes.
And yeah, so that's true. I think it really depends where you're coming from and where your goals are. And I will say, you know, even in terms of risk, investing in like the mutual funds we have, a lot of people would consider us to be very risky investors because of our stock bond allocation. But we understand that risk and we're willing to accept it. Even buying a duplex, some people would think it's really risky to tie up, you know, so much equity. We've talked about flipping a house. These are all things that have a level of risk assigned to them, but we understand that risk and we understand like what the expected value of the payoff is.
Right. I just don't think people should like get into like, you know, let's say like, you know, basically get rich quick schemes that they're right. not familiar enough with the foundational science behind whatever that thing is.
Yep.
Right. To like, I'm going to go invest in like this thing. Right.
Totally and, like, agree with that. But we've already covered like the don't get rich yeah, quick right. thing. And I think in terms of like stepping outside of your comfort zone and challenging yourself as a person from that angle, I think this is really important, whether it's, you know, it's not always in my comfort zone, but I volunteered a lot with Boys and Girls Club in the past to teach personal finance to young kids. That is not like in my comfort zone to like be in front of a room of 15-year-olds, but doing things like that, I do think like helped develop me in different ways, helped me think about personal finance in a different way, which I always feel like I get a lot of reward from, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's different ways to like challenge yourself and push yourself out of your comfort zone without like falling into like the high risk, you know, take $20,000 and invest in somebody's business. Like, I don't think that's the level of risk we're talking about. I think it's like, try something new, go for that promotion at work that maybe you're scared about, you know, do things in that realm that maybe you would be afraid of, but will develop you as a person.
True. Yeah.
So that's my take on it, but. Who knows? Okay, number 14, ask questions. You don't know everything. Put your ego aside. I learned the hard way trying to guess the future leads to failure and poor decisions. If you're not sure about an investment or an idea for your business, do not hesitate to ask for feedback and advice. You know, I would say, yes, you should ask questions, but I would also say, you shouldn't just like take somebody's answer and run with it. You should do a lot of your own further analysis, regardless, to understand what you're doing.
Well, I think this is just playing off of the, you know, top 10 successful people's mentality, right? Is like, if you think you know everything about a situation, you're wrong, right?
Right.
Like, you have to know that you don't know. You have to know that you need to continue learning about what's going on. You have to know that other people are smarter about something than you are, right? Even if they're, you know, hierarchically below you in a company,
yep.
right? Yeah. If you're the CFO, like, you need to rely on the people that are working there to, like, know more than you do. They should know more than you do. You do not know everything. You are just, like, helping the decision-making process.
Well, right? Brett, this is bad for you because you think everyone's an idiot. So.
Ooh, yeah, just most people. Just most everybody.
Number 15, don't be consumed by failure. I think, you know, obviously the idea here is you're going to fail 1,000 times doing life and keep getting back up. My example here is I can't even honestly remember at this point how many times I've failed actuarial exams, but it's a lot. But, you know, I had to pass 10 of them. I don't know. I probably failed at least 10 times if I had to guess. But, you know, now I am an actuary. So don't give up. Don't let failure set you back. Learn from your failures. But there's always a lesson.
I mean, yeah, that's just the beginning of your journey anyway, though, right? Like, it never ends. You're never at the end of it. Like, you have decisions that you make every day that, like, could go bad. And then you still learn from those things. Like, is our risk profile that we're talking about, like, really that great? We don't know. Well, we kind of know. But, like, we know because we, like, have gone through other people's failures.
Was it a good idea to, like, raise the float of our sump pump? No. But we had to learn that the hard way.
Right. Did the basement accidentally start flooding because, like, some weird thing happened? Sure. Great. How many valves did I change under the sink that, like, just started leaking all of a sudden? You know? Plumbing has been my 20 failures in the last 3 months. But now I'm actually pretty darn good at it. So.
Yeah. Okay, number 16. Set daily goals. One of the best habits I've adopted in recent years was writing my daily goals. And first thing in the morning, you know, I think yes and no. Brett and I actually, because we have our slow start to the day where we have a walk and then we eat breakfast, typically we can use that time to talk about what we're going to do in the day. And I know on work days, I do kind of get to my office and I prioritize my day to make sure I'm not dropping the ball on anything big at work, which is super helpful. You know, even in talking to other friends, I think this can be a really hard area where it's like, how do you keep track of everything going on in your life and the priorities and what you need to do? And this is something that, you know, it is important. I think we do it on a micro scale without realizing it. But like, for example, on the weekend, I'll just catalog and be like, all right, you know, on Sunday, I got to like meal prep a bit for the week. And that helps us like achieve our goal of eating healthy and saving money by not having to go out to eat later in the week. And, you know, we need to do X, Y, and Z for our rental property or whatever. And so I think we don't formally do this, but I do think like somehow, whether it's on a piece of paper, on your phone, or in your brain, keeping a log of like, what should I be doing and prioritizing things effectively is super valuable.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily like a critical success factor for like this list, but I think it is super important. And there's a tier where this is very important, right? Like you could be totally not very busy on a regular basis and still like be a wealthy person, right? The kid that plays video game and watches Netflix that has very low expenses but has like a high income, great. He could be a millionaire in like no time, right? But then, you know, if you're somebody that, you know, let's say you just like kind of are like pretty busy, but you have not come up with a system, or you're not busy enough to just like have like enough routine going on in your brain on a regular basis, the more, you know, the busier you are, your brain will figure it out and just process it as it needs to be. But like those people that are like in between, they're just like kind of busy but not busy all the time, or just like just busy enough, those are the people that tell you that they're busy, right? They tell you how busy they are. People that are super busy all the time are very well organized, know that they can carve out time for you or not, and they know when that time is going to be, right?
Right.
Like, they're just with it all the time.
Right. Okay, so number 17, and let's try to, we're at like 33
Speed
minutes,
round.
So we're going to try to finish these last few pretty quickly. Think positively. Long-term success is only possible when you have a positive mindset. You know, yes and no. I think, like, don't stay in that negative framework forever.
You just can't keep knocking yourself down.
Yeah. Okay, that's number fine. 18. That's fine. Number 18, save. So a job will never make you rich, nor will saving all your money in a piggy bank. So how do you build wealth?
Investing in mutual funds. Nailed it.
Yeah, invest. Remember, your car and toys are responsibilities that take away income from your future wealth. So really agree with that.
Yes.
Is like, invest your money. Don't just pull it out all the time to buy things. There's a difference between saving money and then being like, all right, I saved up this money. I'm going to buy this object. So if you save up $50,000 and then you buy a $50,000 car, you have $0 still, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you save up $50,000 and you need a new car and you find a car that fits your needs for $20,000, you still have $30,000 saved, right? And that is what builds wealth, is keeping that money invested. So there's my spiel. Number 19, don't make excuses. So, yes and no, right?
In general, people that continually make excuses for things in their life and don't take accountability where accountability is, you know, makes sense and is their responsibility, I think those people just kind of like kick the can down the road for like everything that happens in their life. Generally, that type of a personality is like never that successful because they're constantly just like not fixing their own problems, right?
Right. And then, okay, so number 20, the last one, is follow the 70-30 rule. One of the county's leading business authorities says to live within 70% of your income for your necessities and basically allocate the remaining 30% to savings. I would say that's totally based on your goals, and maybe 30% is the right number for you. Some people maybe saving 20%. And then I know people who save a lot more. I know some people who save half of their income. That is kind of what Brett and I did. We had jobs that we were both working at. We were both making about equal salary, and we decided to just live on one of our incomes. And that allowed us to get rental properties, to save a lot of money. And that's been very helpful for building our wealth, although we are not wealthy by the, you know,
technical definition
of Google. So, I think this rule is a good starting point, but I would honestly personalize it for you and figure out what your goals are, what you want to achieve, and back into that savings rate.
And I think you'll probably ratchet it up, right? And when you start, I don't think it's going to be that aggressive. I think it will be hard to maintain it and sustain it if you tried to be that aggressive. Mm-hmm. But I think if you try and back into it, like we did, we didn't start at 50%. We just decided, you know, we're going to like keep ratcheting it until we're just like, okay, now we're going to challenge ourselves to try and do this. And if you do it once, you can do it forever. Right. And you can do it. You can even tighten it probably even more than that.
Well, and then as you get raises in life or your income changes, and if you don't inflate your lifestyle, that's like the number one advice I've heard, is don't inflate your lifestyle. And then as you go, all of a sudden your savings percentage just grows because you're just like living on the same amount of money that you're used to.
And even while you're doing it, it's not like super tight. You still figure out how to like go on vacation. You still figure out how to do fun stuff. And like, you know, you'd figure out how to like add some wiggle room in there while still saving that 50%.
Right.
Right. And so.
All right.
Not a bad list. You know?
Actually, a pretty good list. Yeah.
Sometimes these are a total bomb, and this one turned out to be pretty decent.
So this episode, you know, we always post our episodes on all these different streaming services, but also on our website, moneyinthebankpodcast.com. So I will go ahead and link this article as well in case you're interested in like reading the actual article. We glossed over some of the points, but just wanted to give our feedback on this list that showed up in my Google feed. So in Google, we trust, y'all.
That's right, to the Google overlords.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Money in the Bank. Make sure to subscribe to us on the iTunes or Stitcher app so that you get weekly alerts every time we post a podcast. Or if you want, you can visit my website, moneyinthebankpodcast.com. And if you want to reach out with any questions or further comments, please email me at Angie@moneyinthebankpodcast.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Money in the Bank.